Yeah. If you want to take that away from this, yeah. Yes, beware of white. Right, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Good with me. I'm satisfied that I've done my job. If you be suspicious of things that present themselves as righteous, self-righteousness, I would come to doubt it. Good for you. Now, I'm going to read, sorry I didn't deliver on my promise yesterday to talk about the weapons of the Antichrist, and I believe I promised that Wednesday as well, and possibly Tuesday, but I think we had a good little diversion there. At least it wasn't a two-week-long diversion. You know me. I get on these sidetracks, and I make them a sub-series, and I'm gone on for weeks. Look, I'm back already, and we're in Revelation 6, verse 2, and we're talking about the white horse rider. To review, here's what John wrote about the white horse rider that he saw, and I perceived, and lo, a white horse, and he who is sitting on it has a bow. A bow. B-O-W. No. Not a P-O-W. A B-O-W bow. It's not like a bow on a present that I talked about earlier. We're going to see what this is. And to him was given a wreath. And the wreath, again, has to do with victory. This white horse rider has come out victorious from some sort of battle. He's been found worthy by the tribunals of men, and he has been put in charge of this final deception. And he came forth conquering, and that he should be conquering. That's why he's called, or I call him, the White Horse Conqueror. Now, I said that the four horsemen, white being the conquering, red being war, black being famine, and green being plague. I said that none of these things are ever mentioned in detail in the unveiling. We see in detail the further trials, retributions, the further disciplines of God in the form of trumpets, thunders, and bowls poured out on the earth. Those we see in detail. But these general things in the first 3.5 years are mentioned by Jesus Christ. Now, here is where Jesus Christ mentions the white horse rider. Martin, I never heard Jesus Christ in any of the four accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, talking about the white horse rider, and yet he does. Listen to this. Matthew 24, verse 6. Beware that no one should be deceiving you, for many shall be coming in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and shall be deceiving many. Yes, that's the white horse rider. In my name, white, a facade of righteousness, a facade of Christliness, taking the very name of Christ. They're either saying, the Antichrist is either going to say, I am the Christ, and point the finger at himself, or I believe the more subtle deception, he's going to say, I am the Christ, pointing to Jesus. In other words, Jesus is speaking here in Matthew 24, saying, many shall be coming in my name, saying that I, Jesus, am the Christ. I am the Christ. So the Antichrist will acknowledge Jesus Christ as the Savior. And that is going to hook, line, and sinker Christians into this movement big time. Now, look at Mark 13, verse 6. Beware that no one should be deceiving you, for many will be coming in my name, saying, I am, and they will be deceiving many. Basically, the same thing here. Luke 21, verse 8. Beware, you should not be deceived, for many shall be coming in my name, saying that I am, and the season has drawn near. You should not then be going after them. So this is Jesus warning. And again, the unveiling, chapter 6, verse 2, and I perceived, lo, a white horse, and he was sitting on it, has a bow, and to him was given a wreath, and he came forth conquering that he should be conquering. Those are parallel passages. Even though they might not look like it at first glance, they are. And Jesus is warning about false Christs. Many will be coming in my name. What's his name? Jesus Christ. What's the name of the Christian religion? Christianity. It already meets the qualification that Jesus is teaching here. They're coming in his name. And it's verified by those who say in the end times, when he comes to the valley of Jehoshaphat to judge, many will be saying at that time, Lord, didn't we do this in your name? And it is thought today, people are so undiscerning, it is thought that merely naming the name of Christ is enough. And I've come against that. I've criticized Christians, and I've been taken to the woodshed over it by people who should know better. People today are apologists for Christianity, as I started out Monday, just as they are apologists for Islam. Well, there are some good people, and that's a good religion, and it's basically a good thing. That's my imitation of Katharine Hepburn. Christianity is basically a good religion. It's not. The people can be good, yes, but they're an evil, evil, evil system, and it's going to be headed up in the end times, the extremity of the end times, by the man of lawlessness. Okay, and as we get to next week, the Red Horse Rider, which is war, we're going to find similar warnings about war, and then we're going to get to famine, the Black Horse, right? The Black Horse. There's no rider mentioned on these horses. Sorry, there's no rider on the Red Horse. There's no rider on the Black Horse. There's no rider on the Green Horse. Only the White Horse has a rider. And we're going to see the Green Horse, that is speaking of plague, death. And Jesus warns about all these things, all four horsemen he mentions. But I'm going to get to that when I get to it. But I'm just going to give you a sneak preview. Okay, I really want to do this. Matthew 24:6. When we go to the Red Horse Rider, it's concerning war. And Jesus said in Matthew 24:6, yet you shall be about to be hearing battles and tidings of battles. This is none other than the Red Horse. See that you are not alarmed, for it must be occurring, but not as yet is the consummation. I'm going to talk about world wars, because I wonder to myself, have there been any world wars before World War I? And what I found was very interesting. I'm going to share that with you next week. Yeah, why do I use terms like that, share? I'm going to tell you about it next week. I'm just sharing. No, I'm not. I'm telling you these things. So look at his weapon. It's a bow. Look at what it isn't. It's not a spear. It's not a sword. These were common means of killing people. And he's going to come forth to conquer with the bow. But the common means for killing people in the Hebrew scriptures, there's death going on all the time. Israel's just slaying her enemies left and right. Mainly, they use the sword, put to death by the sword. So they're coming up. It's close-range combat, and they're killing you with the sword, or they're stabbing you with their spears. I would have been terrible in the Civil War. Now, I could have shot people if you really made me do it, but I really wouldn't want to do it. Actually, no, I couldn't. You know me. I would throw down the gun and go to some bar and get a drink, and it's like, I'm out of this war. But when it came to the bayonets, hand-to-hand combat, I can't think of anything more horrible than two armies racing at each other full speed with sharp objects attached to the ends of their rifles. That's horrible. But that's how they killed people in war in Israel. But look at the weapon of the White Horse Rider. It's a bow, and I believe this stands for distant warfare. The bow, you can kill somebody with a bow. With a bow, you can kill someone at a distance, like the American Indians used to do. They draw their bow back, and boom, you can shoot an arrow from 200 yards and kill somebody. And look at the flight of the arrow. It's an arc. I guess you could shoot it a different way, but if you're going for distance, you could shoot it in a straight line at a near target. But if you're shooting at a target that's, say, I don't know how far those things can go. I'm just pulling a figure up, 500 feet. You have to give that bow some elevation. You have to give that arrow some elevation. You can't shoot a straight line or it's going to fall off very quickly. So you shoot an arch, and the bow really forms a bow. It forms a bow. The arc of the arrow forms a bow. This is distant warfare. And of course, this is a subtle hint here, but I don't think it's that subtle. This is a military campaign carried on by modern means, because the modern military warfare is you rarely have hand-to-hand combat like they did in the old days. I know even in the Gulf War, you still sent in ground troops, but they're certainly not using bayonets. You're using shoulder-launched bazookas. You're using rifles. We have snipers out today. There's a movie, all right, the American Sniper. They can pick off enemy combatants at great distances using the quote-unquote bow. That is distant warfare. You can conceal yourself and hit an enemy from a distance. And that's the kind of warfare we're looking at today with nuclear arms. People can launch this is what we did in the Gulf War. We sat in our aircraft carriers miles away in the Persian Gulf, and we would shoot a smart bomb at a target hundreds, I don't know, if not thousands of miles away. For a sophisticated weapon, can we hit, I don't know if thousands of miles counts, let's just say hundreds of miles. So you can sit in the relative safety of an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf and strike a target on land hundreds of miles away. And I believe the flight of that warhead would resemble that of a bow, of an arrow in flight. I think this is really significant. And an arrow is swift too. It's like pew, 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 pew. This is modern warfare. You don't need to send foot soldiers. You can drop bombs from airplanes, or you can launch a missile from a silo in New Mexico or wherever our warheads are and send it like a jet airliner over to Iraq and blow them to smithereens with an atomic bomb. You don't even need to load the bomb on a plane anymore, like we did in World War II. Officer Tibbetts took the Enola Gay, dropped it on Hiroshima. I saw that plane, by the way, at the National Air and Space Museum. Terrible. I'm not glorifying these things. I'm just saying that this, to me, suggests modern warfare, where there is little need to worry about space or time. You couldn't do that in the past. You had to worry about space and time. Well, that enemy's over there. They're 300 miles away. We'll have to send a convoy. We'll have to send elephants and soldiers and war horses. Our cavalry must go. You had to go to the enemy, and you had to figure out how long it would take and how much distance you had to go. Space and time are pretty much obliterated with modern warfare. And I am convinced that we're going to see limited, if not widespread, nuclear skirmishes. Once the Islam and the fighting forces there, ISIS, whatever arm of Islam, it's the latest manifestation. Whenever they get hold of a nuclear warhead, and I believe they will, they're not going to hesitate to use it. They want to kill everybody and everything. Their goal is an all-out war against the West, against the whole world. They want the whole world to be Muslim. They want to destroy the enemy religions. And you and I, not you and I, but Christian, because we're not in the enemy religion, we have no... You know, they shouldn't be after us because we're the most exemplary of citizens. We don't stand for any religion. But the Islamic fighters, boy, do they ever hate other religions, and they're going to destroy them. They feel it's their duty. And whenever you think you have God on your side, it makes for the most dangerous combatant ever, who kills you in the name of God. Because when you feel you have God on your side, what's stopping you? The highest authority you can name, God, is for you, and it's going to give you 70 virgins upon your martyrdom. So you got to understand your enemy. And we in the West at this time in history don't understand our enemy. We're stupid. We're disallowing people to say anything insulting, or we're not even asking questions or allowing questions to be asked. It's so ridiculous when you see them at airports patting down 90-year-old women. 90-year-old white grandmothers are being, you know, detained, all in the interest of equal opportunity. We're not going to offend people. We're not going to, what do they call it when you highlight a certain nationality? Not typecasting, but I don't know. There's a politically correct name for it when you isolate a certain kind of person. But 100% of all terrorists are Muslim. 100%. So it's stupid to, in the interest of being respectful to all religions, it's stupid to do this politically correct thing. So anyway, this is going to come to a screeching halt in what I believe to be the worst terrorist attack you have ever seen. I don't know what it is yet, but I think it's coming. And I think that it's going to be the Pearl Harbor of our day, as if 9/11 wasn't. I still don't get how at first it was, but then we lost our nerve and Islam went underground for a while. Now they're coming back with a vengeance. They're attacking everywhere, and they're very patient. They take a long time to develop these plans, but my God, because of the pacifism and the trusting nature of the West and of the Obama administration in particular, we are making it very easy for Islamists to infiltrate our government, the United States government, and the West, and any place, really, and the results are going to be catastrophic. But they're going to drive us to World War III, which will drive us to the manifestation of Jesus Christ.